We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
All right, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, as we get through a, what the hell day is it? Wednesday edition of the show. I always have to check that at the beginning. The week is going by relatively quickly. I feel like I'm more, you know, I got over the COVID last week. I feel like I'm more congested than I was last week, but that could be like allergies and stuff like that.
I don't know.
Who knows, Sue? Who really knows? We just kind of try to get through it. So there's a bunch of stuff that I do, in fact, want to cover today. I have to get to the new White House spokesperson. I put some odds on Karine Jean-Pierre's survival here a short time ago on Twitter, Sue, and I will I'll run that down. I don't think she's going to last very long.
Why? What makes you say that?
Well, she kind of sucks at her job, and that sometimes is a determining factor on whether or not you survive in a job.
Wait a minute. What is this, day two,
yeah,
three?
Yeah, but I'm seeing signs.
What are your signs?
I'll get into it here. I have some audio examples and things along those lines. I'm welcoming in our good friend and the next St. Louis County executive, Jane Duker, into the fold to talk about something. We'll ask her. Have you seen Karine Jean-Pierre? It's day three, but still. I don't know, Jane.
I haven't watched. I've been a little focused on more local stuff, but, you know, it's a really hard job, and I would give it a little bit of time.
It is a hard job.
After some of the – it's the worst job, really. I think chief of staff and probably chief spokesperson is the toughest.
I don't know why you would want it, and I've said that before. And I do think, and I say this sincerely, I think Jen actually did – I think she was full of crap all the time, but she did a good job for the role.
Oh, she's very verbally adept.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And that's what you have to be. It's like verbal volleyball. It really is.
Yeah.
Well, there's a bit of a lack of grasp on the subject matter here from the new press secretary, but we'll get into that here in just a second. The reason I have you on is because you raised a question on Twitter, I think it was yesterday, that I thought was interesting. We're talking about crime and law enforcement and all these things. We passed, as the voters in St. Louis County a few years back, Prop P, which was supposed to be spent on law enforcement, and is money actually being spent on law enforcement from Prop P, I think, is the question.
Well, there's a couple issues there. One, voters in St. Louis County and in the city support their police. And Prop P was billed as helping our police, getting them equipped, getting raises for the officers, getting more officers. Here's what we have. One, we have less officers now than we did when Prop P passed in 2017. So that has failed. And Sam Page has been the county council chair or the county executive for that entire period of time. Second, two substations were supposed to be built, one up north and one south, because they're really substandard substations. And there were bids that went out in 2017. There was bonding that went out. And Sam and Ernie Trakas really were not supportive and killed the project at every turn. We're 5 years into Prop P, and they have broken ground on neither one of the substations.
And estimate was $13 million in 2017. Yeah. Now the cost is $38 million. It's more than doubled.
Yes. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing, preventing Sam Page from getting these substations done during COVID. I mean, he certainly can't do more than one thing at a time, obviously, because these should have been built years ago.
Well, that's not fair. He can be an anesthesiologist and county executive at the same time. We know that.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I forgot. Maybe it was the second job that prevented him from doing more than one thing while he was county council chair and county executive. So there's no excuse. And to somehow blame the previous administration, the reason that they were stalling on the substations is they didn't want the previous administration to get any credit for it. I mean, that's the real fact. So this has been stalled completely. There's no excuse. Now it's going to be more than twice as expensive, just like the convention center. I mean, when you stall things, they made a promise to North County that they would give them the rec center in exchange for the county support of the America Center upgrades. Now they're somehow trying to blame Rita Days because she wanted her part of the bargain. She wanted something devoted to the county with this money. I think a lot of people agree that there should have been county, there should have been a county component to this money. If you're going to do it, the county should have benefited. So, and now the price of that has gone up. So this is routine mismanagement by the Page administration.
And this is the kind of stuff that the taxpayers, you know, look, we got together. That was a campaign where you don't find this very often. A lot of people are on the same page, right? A little bit of a bipartisan effort to say, look, this is money where we think the taxpayers would benefit, and they support it.
Yeah.
Now, so the next time you try to do something like this, that doesn't play well because you're going to know the background of this. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. So that's why I am going to restore the promise of Prop P. So, and look, let's face it, when this money, federal money, dries up, there's going to be budget problems, severe budget problems in the city and significant budget problems in St. Louis County. But that doesn't mean that you get to violate the voters' will. They were also marketed that there would be two officers to cars in high crime areas.
That's right.
We haven't gotten that done.
Yeah.
So those are the two things. And how is it possible? We've gotten better pay, but not without fighting Sam Page. I mean, these collective bargaining agreements were like pulling teeth. And it shouldn't have been that hard. And this is why the police are supporting me, because every step of the way he's been frustrating them. And then he tries to claim that he's somehow pro-police. And, you know, look, it's not flying with voters. I mean, I'm talking to a lot of voters. Crime is not only the top issue. It's like the only issue people care about.
So on
when
that
you
note,
see videos.
Well, yeah. On that note, I wanted to bring this up. I just tweeted this out. Now, this was in the city, but still, it's something that we talk about all the time. A 12-year-old boy, Jane, I don't know if you saw the story, was shot in the back yesterday and critically injured in the 4300 block of Labadie. This is the reporter that did this for KSDK tweeted out that that's the 56th child. The 56th child who has been shot in the city of St. Louis so far this year. We're not even halfway through the year. 56 kids.
Yeah. Correct. And here's part of the problem, and this is another thing that I'm hearing from county voters as I talk to them. They believe that Sam Page is enabling the city not policing. And they're right. I mean, it puts pressure on St. Louis County, St. Charles, Jefferson County, Franklin County, and even St. Clair County.
That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's stressing the other departments because of her failure to police. It affects everyone. And Sam is right on board with that. Well, people do not appreciate that. They don't appreciate. So I don't know if you saw the story that Tim Lomar was interviewed by Fox 2, I believe. And he said that, one, St. Charles has not recorded one murder in 2022. And also, all of the people in the jail in St. Charles County are St. Louis City residents.
All of them. That speaks volumes right there.
People are frustrated. And Sam covers. He doesn't, you know, if you go to the county website right now, I urge you to, where there's a landing page on the website for crime statistics in St. Louis County unincorporated in the municipalities. The page has been under construction since Sam Page took over. He's not even telling people what the crime stats are. If you want crime stats in St. Louis County, you have to go to the FBI website. So, I mean, this cavalier attitude to crime is not resonating with county voters.
No,
big time.
I would say not. All right, listen,
so,
I appreciate the update here this afternoon. We will have you, and we'll see you on the roundtable on Friday. How does that sound?
You've missed me.
I have.
You've missed me.
Terribly. Miss you terribly.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right, honey.
Yeah, she was gone a couple of weeks ago, and then I was gone with the with.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The graduation on Friday. So I do find that very interesting. And the whole thing with kids being shot on a regular basis here in the city, and that barely gets any attention because Cori Bush doesn't talk about it. We never hear anything from the mayor.
It's not an issue, according to her.
Right. We know that the circuit attorney is not doing anything, so we'll continue to track that. Ben Weingarten is coming up here from Real Clear Investigations. He did a great piece on how, and I think this is encouraging, how some of the shareholders for some of these big corporations, Disney, the woke corporations, are pushing back, some of the major shareholders. But let me get into Karine Jean-Pierre, the new White House spokesman. Ducey and her went at it here again today. This will be kind of fun, but not as fun with Jen because she doesn't really have any answers for some of this. So here's one. I don't know if you heard this today, Sue, and I'll get into this a little bit more later in the program, but the disinformation czar, remember the disinformation
czar?
Nina Jankowicz, well, they put a pause on that whole thing. And by the way, the way that this was written up by the Washington Post today is just hilarious. It really is. And the reporter who did it is the same person who did the hit job on the libs of TikTok woman a couple of weeks ago. It's comical that the Washington Post, the St. Louis Post, the New York Times, they keep playing things off as news stories when they're not even close to being news stories. But on that particular front, Ducey asking the new press secretary about it today in the briefing room.
So if it's pausing because you think the board was mischaracterized, then the disinformation board is being shut down because of disinformation? Is that what's happening here?
Look, I mean, the board was put forth for a purpose, right? To make sure that we really did really did address what was happening across the country when it came to disinformation.
And it's okay to wait now, 75 days.
It's going to pause. There's been a mischaracterization from outside forces, and so now what we're going to do is we're going to pause it, and we're going to do an assessment. But the work doesn't stop. We're still going to continue the work. The DHS is still going to continue the work.
I don't think they understand how laughable it is that the American people, and I don't think it should matter if you're on the left or the right or where the hell you are, that you would put trust in our government in Washington and some bureaucrats to decide what is information and what is disinformation, especially after the last 2 years. I mean, if you want to go back a couple of years and then make the case for disinformation, which I think is BS anyway, that's one thing. But you want to do it in the aftermath of Fauci and everything that happened with the pandemic? I don't think so. Well, I think that most people realize that it's a big joke.
I'm amazed that they've figured that out. I assume that's why they're putting it on hold.
They say they're putting it on pause, right? So, you know,
since it's completely illogical and crazy.
Exactly. Now, she was asked another question today, and this was the answer.
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map.
Do you remember this?
I'm
Sue?
Sorry.
This is Miss Teen South Carolina. This is what I was reminded of listening to Karine Jean-Pierre.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so.
This is so uncomfortable.
Because some...
This goes back. You want to take a gander on the year? Do you remember the year of this?
No.
2007. And she just goes on and on. And I think it's Mario Lopez is like the person who asked her the question. He's just sitting there.
Everywhere like such as. And
such as.
I believe
that they should... our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S.
All right. That's enough. That's painful. I did kind of feel bad for that. You know, she was only 17 years old. And I do remember there was some sort of follow-up to that that was not altogether unpositive from a few years back because Maybe we celebrated the anniversary in 2017. But that was was like a viral moment before things really went viral, don't you think?
Oh, for sure.
It was covered in all the media. But I honestly, so this was my, and I'm going to be serious here. We're going to have to track this soon and see if it happens, because I've laid down as a fan of gambling, and you know, I'm going back to Las Vegas here in a few weeks. I had to lay some odds down here. So I have, ladies and gentlemen, put the over-under on Karine Jean-Pierre's survival in the briefing room at 3 months. And I'm going to take the under. So
are
I don't
you
think,
really?
Yeah, I don't think she's going to last very long. She's, somebody said on Twitter, yeah, she's going to be pursuing other opportunities. Now, to Jane's point, maybe she gets a little better in this role. I don't know, but she, I don't think she's got the chops. I really don't. Sometimes, look, Sue, I call him like I see him, and sometimes you got to go in early and say, this is not going to work, and I think this is not going to work.
I think it would be tough to follow Jen Psaki.
Yes.
I'm not saying she was accurate, but again, she was extremely good at saying nothing.
Well, they say you never want to be the guy who follows the guy.
You really don't.
You never want to be the gal that follows the gal is probably something. Although, you just never want to be the non-binary, you know, that follows the non-binary either. I think you got to cover all the bases
there,
don't
you?
Can't argue with that. Apparently, it's somewhat statewide elected officials day on the Mark Reardon Show. We have the Attorney General Eric Schmidt in the 5 o'clock hour. He's been accused. He's been linked to this replacement theory. It's a bunch of nonsense, and we'll set it straight in the 5 o'clock hour. And the governor, who has not been with us for a while, Mike Parson, as the legislative session wrapped up last week, he will check in at 5:25. He's going to sign in the next hour, actually. Right about now, I think he's going to sign the map. Yeah, the legislation for the new congressional map, which was hardly contentious at all. And they barely had any issues coming to a resolution on that. So it's good to see. Ben Weingarten is with me this afternoon with Real Clear Investigations. He did a great piece and investigation into some of the things that are happening with corporate America. And maybe an encouraging sign that we're getting some pushback from some big shareholders. Ben, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm well. Thanks so much for having me, and it's always a pleasure.
Well, you started this story with a guy. I thought this was interesting. You kind of juxtapose your story with a guy by the name of Justin Danhof, who is a conservative activist investor, and you kind of go back to something that happened 8 years ago. Share that story and why it might be a little bit different now.
Yeah, it's sort of a remarkable story, and when most people think about activist investors, they might think of the movie Wall Street and sort of these corporate raiders buying and selling companies, trying to wring efficiencies out of them. But today, they're actual political shareholder activist investors. And overwhelmingly, they are leftists who will use annual shareholder votes to push a woke agenda, to push environmentalist initiatives that a company goes green, carbon net neutral, zero, to impose diversity quotas within boards and other policies like that. And that's contributed to corporate America going very woke. Justin Danhof was pretty much a lone voice in the wilderness when 8 years ago he took to Apple shareholder meeting and basically asked the question a few different ways of CEO Tim Cook, does your desire for Apple to go green trump your desire to generate profits for your shareholders?
Right, right.
And Tim Cook was furious at this question and basically told Danhof, you can take your shares and shove them if you're going to prioritize profit over, you know, keeping the world clean. And Danhof at the time, you know, was basically, as I said, a lone voice. It was him and his outfit. Now there are other outfits, and not only other outfits, who have contributed to a record number of conservative shareholder activists resolutions this year. But there is a slew of not only journalists and intellectuals pushing back on the woke capital agenda. Obviously, we've seen Governor DeSantis take on Disney in Florida, but also a whole slew of state legislators and now federal lawmakers all getting into the game of trying to bring the business world back to political neutrality, to take politics, largely progressive politics, out of the corporate boardroom, out of corporate America writ large.
Okay, so some of this is a little foreign to just a guy like me who talks on the radio. And when you write about these conservative shareholder proposals that are submitted to companies, what is that? And I guess that's pretty common, but some of us are unfamiliar with that. So how does that work?
Sure. So, and let me also set the context here, which is that you, your listeners, your friends, neighbors, to the extent that you are invested in a portfolio in companies, or you have a 401k retirement account, various retirement accounts or pension funds or the like, you are likely exposed to the woke takeover of corporate America. You are likely invested either via a major asset manager like a BlackRock or in these individual companies in one way or another,
right,
supporting an agenda that you might not agree with. And every year, essentially, corporations, they have these kind of standard votes, usually on who's on the board and what kind of pay should top executives get. But then shareholders can also put forth their own resolutions. And they're not binding resolutions, but they can put questions to the board like, will you come up with a report that shows all the ways your company is emitting carbons, and then your 5, 10, and 15-year plan to get to zero? Or what initiatives are you taking to ensure that your company reflects the diversity of the communities in which it operates? And they will use these resolutions to essentially push corporations left. And we've, of course, seen corporate activism, political activism, on a whole slew of issues in recent years, from guns to abortion and well beyond those matters as well, right down to, you know, criminal justice in America. Now there are conservative shareholder activists who have submitted around 50 counter proposals essentially this year, and they call for things like viewpoint diversity in the boardroom as opposed to just racial or ethnic diversity.
Go figure, right?
Right. By the way, the kind of thing that should redound to the benefit of the company, its employees and shareholders have a bunch of diverse views in that kind of room. So they're trying to counter the leftist activism within these corporations with shareholders just to bring companies back to focusing on what they're supposed to do best, which is not only serving their shareholders, of course, but serving the public, their customers.
So it's one thing to make an effort and to draft those proposals, but is it potentially working? What does the investigation show? Is there some impact here?
Yeah, so I'd say there is impact to the extent that corporations now have to answer questions, sometimes uncomfortable questions, in a public forum that they did not have to answer before. And in my reporting, I found that in some cases, executives have off the record gone to shareholder activists and said, you know, we actually appreciate your consideration and you're bringing this forward and it's a worthwhile voice, even if we disagree with it. But that said, even more important, I think, than the conservative shareholder proposals, and they are significant. And they are moving, by the way, companies when it comes to China, for example, and human rights violations in China and what businesses are doing there. And this is on a bipartisan basis. But beyond that, there is a move in state legislators to ensure that public pension funds, for example, are not invested via asset managers or in companies that basically follow the green agenda of essentially discriminating against energy companies, divesting from thermal coal companies, for example, in the case of BlackRock, and eschewing, you know, the real engine of the American economy, which has been energy at the forefront of everything. So there's a big pushback within state legislatures to pull money or threaten to pull money out of these asset managers that follow this woke agenda. And by the way, lean on these corporations with the power of their holdings to follow the progressive worldview that they hold, led by BlackRock here. And then beyond that, there's going to be pressure, especially if there's a Republican House and or Senate after 2022, to push back on the feds, because the SEC has pushed very hard towards mandating companies to disclose a whole slew of green standards, which are a huge regulatory cost and also essentially represent the government getting into the business of imposing its views on corporations where they've never existed there in the past. Moving corporations away from a focus, again, on serving their customers and their shareholders and towards serving the agenda of activists and politicians in many cases.
So Ben Weingarten is here from Real Clear Investigations. You quote someone in here named Stephen Sukup, is his name, Sokup? Sorry if I don't know the pronunciation. So he describes, because I think one of the questions in all of this is, how the hell did this happen and where is it all coming from? And he has some ideas. He's quoted as saying, look, corporations face pressure to go woke from the bottom up, the top down, and outside in. What does that all encompass? Everyone.
Yeah, within a corporation, of course, look, companies are likely going to follow ideologically kind of the trajectory of society. Corporate executives are largely going to have a pedigree that puts them at pretty good schools, and those pretty good schools, at least on paper, are usually going to have followed a pretty progressive trajectory.
Absolutely.
Over the last several decades.
Right.
So you have the executives. You have executives who feel a need to be responsive to their employees, younger employees in many cases, who believe that there ought to be a political voice in the boardroom and that corporations ought to be a voice of conscience, essentially, in America, polls show that people trust corporations more than politicians in many cases. And then you have Wall Street itself. And Wall Street's really the $10 trillion behemoth in the case of BlackRock in the room. These Wall Street asset managers, in large part, are all on board that green agenda. And they obviously think they can profit from it to some extent, because when they have these green energy geared portfolios, they charge a premium to manage these portfolios. So there's a money incentive there. There is also an ideological agenda among some on Wall Street that they really believe in pushing towards a world which is focused on what's called ESG, environmental, social, and governance investing, as well as diversity, equity, inclusion, and a slew of other progressive initiatives as well. And those Wall Street asset managers have massive power over companies because they are, in effect, the largest shareholders in many of these companies, because they hold shares on behalf of all the people who invest in them, like you and your listeners probably, through your retirement accounts, 401ks, pensions, etc. They have huge power with their market size, and they can move essentially the entire economy in their ideological direction.
So circle back, you said something I was going to follow up on here with the ESG and how some people think it's a gimmick because some of these guys can rebrand things and then make some money, right? They can double, triple their fees.
Yep, it's exactly right. So, you know, they're managing these portfolios, and usually they track an index, for example, like the S&P 500, and it gives you access, if you invest in one of their funds, to, you know, broad, diverse portfolio in the marketplace. First of all, what they define as ESG is somewhat suspect because, for example, Apple qualifies as a pro-ESG company, but Apple is a really profitable company regardless of its environmentalist focus. So sometimes it appears they try to gin up and make more attractive investing in so-called ESG-type funds, when in reality, those funds are basically just funds of big companies that happen to have fairly progressive executives, but that are really successful companies. So they use that to juice up the attractiveness of it. But beyond that, oftentimes by adding ESG to their products and saying that we're not going to invest in, you know, companies in XYZ industry, like, say, oil or coal, they slap the ESG label on those companies, regardless necessarily of how much those companies adhere to this proclaimed ESG standards. And by the way, I should say that ESG ratings go all across the board on companies. Tesla, for example, if you look at these different ESG rating companies who are also invested in this agenda because they can sell their research and their ratings on these companies, Tesla gets three different ratings from three different raters. So it's clear, it's very unclear that what company actually is ESG, but they can charge a premium for it if you're an investor in one of these funds.
Well, I find this really interesting and revealing, and I'd be very curious. I'm sure that the team over there, as you move forward, might do a follow-up on this and see where we are in a couple of years if we can kind of put the brakes on some of this. But, Ben, thank you so much. Really good work here with Real Clear Investigations, and I appreciate coming on 97.1 FM Talk here in St. Louis.
Thanks much for having me. Appreciate it.
I love it, but I'd be very curious to see if there's going to be an impact, just because I think some of this stuff, especially when it comes to pensions and things along those lines, we do need to get the woke capitalism out of there, but who the hell is going to be the arbitrator of that anyway? That's one of the concerns. Coming up, a little bit more on our new press secretary and the blowback on the disinformation czar kind of came to fruition today. We'll explain that in a little bit more detail coming up next. Sue's News after the top of the hour. That's Sue's News coming up after 4 o'clock. I have a story. I don't know that you're covering it. We don't communicate on what you're covering and what you're not just because we like the spontaneity. But do you have anything pickle related today?
I do not, but thank you for asking.
I got a pickle story. I think you might like this. I think everyone might like the pickle story. I'm not going to kind of tell you anything more, but we now know, we have confirmation that there will be a pickle story. It's just that I will be doing the pickle story in the next hour. This is the afternoon on Wednesday afternoon that our buddies Alex Rich and Hayes from Y98 come by, so we'll get a visit from them and the Attorney General Eric Schmidt in the 5 o'clock hour, along with Governor Mike Parson, who is signing the legislation as we speak, I think, or he did just a short time ago, on the new congressional districts here in Missouri. So I have to get back to the Nina Jankowicz story because it's just so comical. And for someone like me who's been following bias in the media for decades and decades and highlighting bias in the media, it's just become so easy. You know, you used to kind of have to dig down underneath the surface just a little bit, but they make it so damn easy anymore. It's disgusting is what it is. I mean, the amount of media malpractice by the legacy media is on steroids. And here is your latest example, Exhibit A. In the Washington Post, before I do this, let me back up just a little bit, because I'm going to tell you what the Washington Post did here with their headline. But let's review how we got into this situation with the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas being grilled in front of a congressional panel, being asked about this person, what the hell she's all about. And by the way, did you know what she said in the past on Twitter about Hunter Biden and some of these other things, which wasn't misinformation, and now she's the person in charge of kind of reining back the disinformation? Didn't make a whole lot of sense then, doesn't make sense now.
She had said that Mr. Hunter Biden's laptop is Russian disinformation.
I was not aware of that.
She had vouched for the veracity of the Steele dossier.
I was not aware of that fact.
Was the department aware of her TikTok videos?
Senator, they're
really quite precocious.
Senator, I was not aware.
All right, that's
Did they research
that
it?
Is, by the
not
way, this is
all?
Not at all. Here's Nina really quite singing there. She's a good singer, though. So here's the headline today. Now, you know, and if you've been following this story, it's been a disaster from the beginning. First and foremost, I said this earlier, how anyone thinks that the government should be in charge of, you know, policing misinformation is beyond me. So here's the headline, Taylor Lorenz. Now, what's interesting about Taylor Lorenz, apparently a reporter with The Washington Post, doesn't sound like a reporter. She's the one who did the hit piece on the libs of TikTok a few weeks ago, and that was a complete joke. So she was criticized for that. And here's the headline that they wrote today. How the Biden administration let right-wing attacks derail its disinformation efforts. Let me tell you something, Taylor Lorenz. You didn't need the right-wing attacks. All you had to do was just listen to Mayorkas with some basic questions, and you realize that this is a complete and total joke. But listen to the tone of the story. On the morning of April 27th, the Department of Homeland Security announced the creation of the first Disinformation Governance Board, with the stated goal to coordinate countering misinformation related to Homeland Security. The Biden administration tapped Nina Jankowicz, a well-known figure in the field of fighting disinformation and extremism, as the board's executive director. Listen to the praise that she heaps on Nina right there in that opening paragraph. Now, let me ask this, Sue. Do you think that maybe Nina Jankowicz and Taylor Lorenz had a relationship of any sort?
Here's
a long series of tweets that Glenn Greenwald has pulled up from a variety of dates in the last couple of years, including May 31st of last year. I'm so sorry, Taylor. We're with you. Reaction to something. How about June 24th of 2021? What? This is amazing news. Congrats, Taylor. All of these things. Thank you for sharing, Taylor. All kinds of communication between the disinformation czar and this disinformation reporter from the Washington Post. Now, that's only just a little bit of a side story here. That in and of itself should disqualify this reporter from doing a story on this person.
Yes.
Any editor, I went to journalism school, I'm embarrassed to even say that. But if you go by the tenets of journalism, that is a conflict of interest, okay?
Absolutely.
That's like, what would be the analogy here? Although there is no analogy anymore because they all do it. It's like the reporters from the Post-Dispatch heaping praise on Kim Gardner or, you know, the mayor. Which, by the way, I think most of the reporters don't even do that. No. They actually adhere. The reporters. I'm not talking about the editors and, you know, the people like Tony Messenger and all that. But so they go on here and she says, within hours of her appointment, Jankowicz was thrust into the spotlight by the very forces she dedicated her career to combating. I want to throw up in my mouth here, listening to the way that she's described. The board itself and DHS received criticism for both its somewhat ominous name and scant details of specific mission. Yeah, because they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. So then comes the meat of the story. Now, just 3 weeks after its announcement, the Disinformation Governance Board is being paused. So here's a little sample of what we found out about the disinformation czar, right?
What exactly will this Disinformation Governance Board do? Will it monitor American citizens?
Those criticisms are precisely the opposite of what this small working group within the Department of Homeland Security will do.
Will American citizens be monitored?
No.
Guarantee that.
So what we do, we in the Department of Homeland Security don't monitor American citizens.
You don't, but will this board change that?
No. The board does not have any operational authority or capability.
So what the hell do they do?
Right.
What the hell are they supposed to do? It's outrageous. Here's Senator Tom Cotton.
I'm glad to know that this Orwellian Ministry of Truth is at least paused for the moment, but I think it's important to realize that it's only paused because the American people found out about it. The government has no business refereeing disputes engaged in political campaigns or public debates. If you don't like someone else's speech, the solution is more speech. It's not to use the Department of Homeland Security, for goodness sakes, to try to censor or label someone's arguments in the public sphere.
So Tom Cotton is right. This has no role for the government. You take the personalities, the friendship between Taylor Lorenz at The Washington Post and Nina Jankowicz, all these things, put them aside. I think most people are sitting back saying this is not the role for the federal government. I'm that reporter.
I don't know who that reporter is, but she seems as excitable and unhinged as Nina Jankowicz did. Not only should we never have a Ministry of Truth like this board, but we shouldn't have a woman like that purporting to referee debates among the American people. There was no coordinated right-wing internet campaign or anything else. What you had were millions of Americans who saw the same set of ominous facts, and their elected representatives here in Washington and around the country recoiling from the idea that the federal government, the Department of Homeland Security, with all of its law enforcement and national security powers, might be refereeing political debates in the public sphere. That's not coordination. That's not a campaign. That's the citizens of a free country jealously guarding their freedoms.
He is exactly right. But the whole tone of this article that's in the Washington Post and the people who are outraged that Nina Jankowicz has been taken down, they try to make the case in this story that because some people tweeted out actual facts about this and they tweeted out her singing and they tweeted out the fact that this person thought that the Hunter laptop thing was a bunch of crap and she bought into the Russian, you know, buying the election thing. How in the world? She's been discredited time and time and time again. But here you have the legacy media making the case that the only reason that she was brought down is because of the evil right-wing white supremacist that tweeted out facts about Nina Jankowicz. I love the fact that they don't get it because, ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you right now, they don't get it. They don't understand why so many people were horrified. Again, taking the personalities out of it, that this is something that the federal government should begin ever taking on.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.